This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. The Crimes Against Children Research Center at the University of New Hampshire reports that 1 in 5 girls and 1 in 20 boys suffer sexual abuse. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're going to be talking about the need for child molestation, sexual abuse prevention, education for children. My guests are Richard Alexander, a nationally recognized personal injury and consumer protection attorney, former vice president of the State Bar of California, with law office in San Jose, Tanis Crosby, Chief Executive Officer of the YWCA Silicon Valley in San Jose, and Judge Eugene Hyman, a retired Santa Clara County Superior Court judge. Funding for this program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. I welcome you to the program.
Good to be here.
Thank you very much for coming. Would you, Richard, would you kind of just give us a brief kind of summary of what we're talking about here and the concern that you and Tanis and the judge have?
We have seen over the years news story after news story talking about the arrest and prosecution of child molesters without really addressing the underlying issue, and that is, how did they get there? They got there by being molested. And if you ask anyone what is the average age of a molester, you'll hear a whole range of ages, when in fact the Department of Justice tells us, and with good accuracy, that the average age of a molester is 14 years old. Mm-hmm. The average age of a molestee, a person who is abused, is 9 years old. So the 9-year-old who was abused goes on to become a molester, and some of those without appropriate intervention become hardwired and are pedophiles. And the real issue is, are we going to address this development and training and of molesters by prosecutions of older adults? What can we do at the front end to begin educating children to have the resilience and the power to stop from being molested?
Tanis, you have developed, you and your team at the YWCA Silicon Valley, a child abuse prevention program. And summarize for us, who are the children? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Because I think what you have done, as I have read the article that you did in the San Jose Mercury with the actually with Kathy Gomez, who's the superintendent of the which is the school there.
It's the Evergreen School District.
The Evergreen mm-hmm. School District. You did this article in the Mercury, and then Richard and the judge did an article a little before that in the Mercury about abuse prevention education. What have you and your team at the YWCA Silicon Valley done? Who are you focusing on, and what are you doing?
What we're doing is making sure that every single school member, every single student, every child in the Evergreen School District knows what to do about sexual abuse. It's how to identify it, what to do when it happens, how not to be a bystander. What we want to do is make sure that children are supported, they have safety, they know what to do so they can stop, go, walk away, run, and tell somebody. And then when they tell somebody, that they will be believed.
How do you deal, though? I know one of the programs focuses on kindergartners. Mm-hmm. How do you get across to the average kindergartner what you're talking about so that they understand what's going on?
Absolutely. Well, it's all developmentally appropriate and designed at the specific child development stage. Mm-hmm. And the way in which we deliver the program, every single child in the district receives the education every few years. So mm-hmm. it's not just you do it once and we're done. Mm-hmm. No, we're changing attitudes, we're changing behaviors, we're helping children understand key fundamental concepts about their rights, about what a bully is, what their plan is if something happens that doesn't feel right to them. Really starting to to look at, it's almost like a health education around what are private parts, you know, the things that cover you up in a swimsuit, and what feels right for them. So it's not about labeling what's bad, what's good. It's not about stranger danger. It's about, as Richard mentioned, it's about empowerment of children to identify what violence is when they are feeling it, so that they have, they understand what steps they can take. And as adults, we need to support, identify, believe, and support our children in taking action.
Now, one of the interesting aspects of that educational program is that it educates adults. Before children are included in the Evergreen program, parents have to approve, and very, very few parents object, and with good cause. We do not have institutionalized in our society the ability to be transparent with children so that they can learn appropriate words and be able to explain what is happening to them and how they feel. So if when they are in a situation where they feel uncomfortable and have butterflies, they can really say no. And we will empower them to say no and go, or just run and tell someone. And that's that is a powerful tool for children to know that they have that control. This whole idea that we are not going to expose children to the vulgarities of the world is hopelessly out of date and inappropriate. It's going to happen. It happens time and time again. So we can stop this culture, this cyclical development of child molesters coming out of nine-year-olds becoming 14-year-olds and some of them becoming pedophiles. And the fun thing, Tanis, tell them about the parent involvement in your program.
Well, we make sure that every parent gets information. They get FAQs. Parents get sent home a letter. I mean, this is not a one-stop, one-time thing. And the partnership that we have with the school district is extraordinary because they understand we need to look at how we prevent child abuse top, down, sideways, with parents, with children, teachers, administration, all combining our efforts together. There's no one silver bullet, right? There's a multitude of solutions here. But what I'd like to pick up on what Richard said around, you know, what we have to do around educating parents. And, you know, when we think about as parents, as adults, the enormous power that we have over children. And, you know, have you ever been in a family situation where you've encouraged a child to go over there and kiss an aunt or an uncle and that child has recoiled and said no? But we make them do it anyway. You know, what are we teaching our children in those circumstances? We're saying, you don't have a choice. You know, your body is not your own. Go hug that person. That's not the message as adults that we should be sending. And as Richard again pointed out, it's empowering children to have consent, to have agency, and to understand what consent means, and that it is okay to say no. That's fundamental. That requires a cultural shift, and education at an early age can and will change those norms.
One of the things that obviously makes it very important what you are doing, and of course the YWCA Silicon Valley, this is the first of its kind in the United States. Is that right?
Well, there are child abuse prevention models. What is unique is that this really isn't happening in a lot of places in our state. I mean, this might seem really fundamental, but the sad reality is actually in the past 12 months, the funding available for rape prevention education was basically halved.
In the state of California?
In the state of California. So there are about half of the organizations that were providing these kinds of services in our state that now exist today. Okay.
Where have these organizations gone, and where have the people gone?
These are rape crisis centers that no longer have the funding.
Doors are closed.
Well, some of them are continuing to do crisis intervention, but not rape prevention education. So the ability to do this work has been reduced at the very moment in time that we know that more is needed. And that's the tragedy of this. As Richard is pointing out, in order to combat this, we've got to work with children. But the resources available to do that work are diminishing.
There's one very important thing to know. In California, when we began providing sex education in high schools, where the rules, the basic rule in California is that teachers, if they're going to have a sex education program in high schools...
Dick, you always must remember to turn off your cell phone.
I did.
I have a new theme song. Pardon me. Go ahead.
Anyway, we know that in the high school...
You did that for purpose, didn't you? On purpose, yeah.
I turned it off, Chuck. I definitely turned it off.
By the way, while he's recovering from that faux pas, and we'll get back to you, Richard, in just a moment. Let me just mention to you, in case you tune in a little bit late, this is your Legal Rights. We are live in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. We're live on the Internet at www.klw.org. And we're also now live on the NPR satellite through the funding of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. We're doing this program on Wednesday evening, August 19th. If you have questions, we'll take some questions, comments from you in the second half hour. We're on for a whole hour. And let me give you the toll-free number. Don't call until another 20 minutes or so, but that's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you did tune in a little bit late, let me tell you who my guests are. Judge Eugene Hyman, a retired Santa Clara County Superior Court judge, who we'll hear hopefully in just a minute or so. Tanis Crosby, Chief Executive Officer of the YWCA Silicon Valley in San Jose, and Richard Alexander, a nationally recognized personal injury and consumer protection attorney. And Richard, back to you. Go ahead.
Well, when we started in California, there was a lot of upset about having sex education in high schools. And California adopted a set of rules that has certain requirements for sex education in high schools. And the end result is that the out-of-wedlock birth rate has gone down. Mm-hmm. So for all of the objectors who didn't want to have 9th grade, 10th grade, already sexually active young women be informed of what was available, that it's paid off. And you're going to see the same impact with the kind of program that Tanis has. And in fact, Judge Hyman has been instrumental in laying a substantial foundation in the area of juvenile domestic violence prevention, and put together a fabulous program in Santa Clara County with others that received a United Nations award, the first such award granted to any program in the United States. And he was instrumental in formulating that. And those educational efforts have resulted in tremendous changes in juvenile justice in many counties.
Judge Hyman, you sat on the juvenile court.
I did for 5 years, and I'd just like to reinforce what your guests have been saying, which is that the children that I saw, not all, but a lot, that were abusing sexually other kids had themselves been sexually abused for the most part, and that's where they learned it, and they were acting out in terms of abusing other kids. The good news is if there's early intervention and if it's done effectively, most of these kids can be rehabilitated, and they stop their sexual acting out, and they stopped their illegal behavior. But it's also important that the courts, whether it be the juvenile court or the adult court, when there's an opportunity ethically to do so, that the judge let victims know that they've been heard and that they've been believed whenever a judge has adjudicated a case in terms of making a finding that there's been sexual assault, or if a jury's made a finding with respect to sexual assault. Because a lot of these victims, unfortunately, have been made to feel that they aren't believed. And sometimes this happens because parents, and a lot of times in domestic violence situations, will tell them that they're lying when they complain and things things of that nature, mm-hmm. which just compounds their problems. You know, the criminal justice system, whether it be adult or juvenile, is limited in terms of the kinds of interventions that it can provided to victims in terms of restitution, which is why it's important that victims get to personal injury lawyers like Richard to be able to get the potential additional compensation to be able to move on to a better place. So that's critical. But the court needs to, when it can, reinforce that victims are believed and to encourage them to get the care and the help that they need so that they, too, can move on effectively.
Tanis, what efforts are being made? Obviously, you've done a great job of putting together these programs for these kindergartners, second graders, fourth mm-hmm. graders, teenagers, et cetera, because mm-hmm. you do go into the teens.
We do.
You have those programs, too. What efforts are being made by the YWCA Silicon Valley to try to reach out to other YWCAs or other groups to, hey, we've got this wonderful program mm-hmm. where we're trying to help these young people protect themselves? What efforts are being made? Because that's why, really, when Judge Hyman suggested to me I do this program with Richard and him, and then I think Richard mentioned that you would come on, Tanis.
Mm-hmm.
I did that because I want to send a message through this program that this wonderful program that you have put together is something that other areas, mm-hmm. certainly in California, if not the United States,
absolutely.
Should copy what you're doing.
Well, let's first start at home. And in Santa Clara County, this is happening in one school district.
Yes.
And one of the smaller school districts, right? Mm-hmm. And it's happening because the board sees it's a good idea because of the leadership of the supervisor, Kathy Gomez, superintendent, and the teachers and the parents. The parents asked for it. Leadership responded. This needs to happen in every school district in every county. So one by one by one, we can make this happen.
When did you start making this happen?
2 years ago.
Only two years ago.
All right. So if listeners want this kind of sexual abuse prevention education in their school districts, call the YWCA Silicon Valley, and let's work to make sure that parents have their voices heard within their school districts. This is happening because Evergreen School District made it a priority and is funding it. This is not happening because the state made funds available. This is happening on the ground because parents recognize this is of vital importance for the protection and safety of our children.
Would you give the phone number that people, if they, you know, this program certainly will be distributed the first half hour throughout California. Would you give the phone number where people can call to find out what you're doing and how they can try to adopt
Absolutely.
What you are doing?
408-295-4011. Press 0 to get the front desk between 8:30 and 8. And let
8:30. 8:30 and 8?
Yes, we have
11
staff.
And a half hours?
We have team members. We provide on-site counseling. We provide on-site multi-service. We are there to empower women and eliminate racism.
Good for you. Let me give it again. Area code 408-295-4011 and press 0.
And speak to one of our wonderful team members so we can work on this together.
Okay.
We not only have to change it at the community level with introducing this education and making sure that it's paid for, because the amount that it takes to put this program into to be effective is just next to nothing compared to all the damage that's done mm-hmm. by child molestation across our state and across the country. U.S. Child Protective Services estimate there's something close to 700,000 children who are victims of abuse in 2013. We also need to change state law. California law currently does not mandate early childhood education in prevention, and it's something that must be done. And our legislators, our senators, our assembly representatives have to be encouraged to change the education code to to amend and mandate that this early education and in prevention is something that will have a tremendous impact. This is nothing new. I mean, this has been going on in Europe for a good 10 years or so. The United Nations has been all over this. There are multiple materials that are available on the internet. And our hang-up, so to speak, in this society is that we refuse to be transparent on sexually important issues. And this one is critical because children who are molested end up integrating that, and it can impact their personality development. And some of the therapists that I've talked to will explain how a young child develops very unusual ideas. One, when they're on some occasions, they're actually enjoying pleasure, so they have that conflict. Secondly, they've been told by a molester, this is secret, this is special. You are special. This is something that only we know. This is between us. And they exploit that relationship. And the end result is that children have a very convoluted concept of what's happening here. And the down line, that has tremendous impact. It has impact as their own personal sexuality develops. And I want to talk to the first person who has an absolutely perfect sex life. It doesn't exist, but we don't need this kind of impediment placed in the on a huge number of people. So that little girl goes to the first dance, and maybe this whole concept comes back, the bad experience she has to deal with. It impacts women in pregnancy. It impacts women at childbirth. It impacts women when children are born. And this is a horrendous crime. And fortunately, women have a better chance of busting out of it with proper therapy and help. Boys, it's really tough because they're so shamed that they don't want to come forward. And the help that is there is just—it's stunning, and it's reassuring of what you can see in terms of positive results with from good professionals with early intervention and early therapy.
Kenneth, your child abuse prevention program also goes out to, and you call it the Teen Empowerment Program Workshops for all 6th and 7th grade students. Have you been doing that for the last 2 years, or is that even more recent?
Well, focused in reaching everyone in the specific district for the last couple of years.
I see.
But these are programs that we've been in place for just about 40 years. So the YWCA Silicon Valley, we were one of the first rape crisis centers in the entire country. So we've got decades of work and firsthand expertise, and know as well that we have a counseling unit. We have specifically trained licensed clinical social workers and therapists that are specialized in trauma treatment. So as a multi-service agency, we as a team prevent sexual abuse, respond to, support the treatment in terms of therapy, and train the next generation of therapists who are coming from a trauma-informed approach. So it's that kind of intersection of program intervention support and then response. We have medical advocates that support survivors to accompany them to a medical examination when a sexual assault is reported, right on down to supporting survivors and accompanying them in front of judges to support them in seeing their coming to justice. So this is the full spectrum of what we do. I do want to point out how important this is in terms of thinking about the response, because we can choose to respond with, ducking our heads in the sand, or we can identify that this is an uncomfortable topic that must be addressed early in order to get the kind of long-term change that we seek for our family members, for our children, and for our community.
Judge Hyman.
Thank you. I want to I agree with everything that's been said by both of your guests. I just want to emphasize that what's also been said with respect to males, they are the most difficult to intervene because they're led to believe, based upon society and based upon what they're experienced, that if they are sexually assaulted, it's their fault for being weak, for not fighting back, and for not being able to defend themselves. So they're less likely to complain, because of those sociological factors and because of how it's perceived by us in terms of their weakness. And they're also a little bit more difficult to intervene with as victims because, again, somehow they feel they're at fault for causing it. Or some I've actually heard with respect to some of them in terms of their perception that they look effeminate or that they look gay or they look something else, which is obviously a total misperception. But again, it's what sort of society has implied over the years. And so it's really critical that intervention occur as quickly as possible and that they be assisted so that they don't ultimately become perpetrators.
Before we end the first half hour, which, by the way, I refer to as the statewide version of the program, which we record and then we send it out, the station sends it out to about 15 stations that air the program next week in California. But for all of you who are listening and listen to the program live, I just want to let you know we do something at the end of the month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month, called Call a Lawyer. While I'm doing a live program on the air where listeners can call in, there will be a number of attorneys here in the conference room at the station, KALW in San Francisco, who will take calls off the air. And we're doing that next Wednesday, August 26th. And wherever you are in the United States, you can call in. The toll-free number, and this will be California time, 7 p.m. Pacific time, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917, and no obligation on your part whatsoever, but I wanted you all to know about that. Dick, Richard, I should say this. You've got 1 minute here, or actually half a minute if you don't mind. If someone has a problem, a parent has a problem, and sees that their child has been sexually abused, who do you recommend they go to try to get some help from? If you take no more than half a minute here, please, on that.
The first thing is to obtain appropriate medical care and talk to professionals who have experience. We talk to many people across California who call our office, and we're happy to refer and to begin the process of healing. It's taking that first step. If there's a molestation, you have to involve the police early on. The police departments have very well-trained adults who will make sure that no further damage is done.
Richard, let me stop you right there. Because what we need to do, I want to give you, we'll continue with his comments in just a moment, but that is the end of our statewide version of the program. I want to invite you to call in on our toll-free number if you have a question, a comment, something that you'd like to share and you think might be helpful to others to listen to. The toll-free number here is 866-798-8255 for your legal rights, 866-798-8255. Richard, go ahead. Finish what you were saying, if you would.
Once you, it doesn't cost anything to talk to lawyers, and there are many of us, many lawyers with the National Board of Trial Advocates and other organizations who are available to answer your questions. We have a toll-free number. You can find us on the internet, alexanderinjury.com, and we are available to provide assistance and referral. The important thing is to get to someone who knows what they're talking about. Do not rely on outdated information from family members who really don't have any experience in what the long-term impact is of child molestation, because it is severe and it is outrageous, and we can end it.
And might I encourage survivors to reach out to their local rape crisis center. In the San Francisco Bay Area, YWCA Silicon Valley operates two 24-hour crisis lines. May I give those numbers?
Oh, please.
408-287-3000. That's 408-287-3000. The next number in Mid-Peninsula is 650-493-7273. That's 650-493-7273. We have advocates available 24 hours a day. If you have experienced a sexual assault, we will accompany you for a medical exam. We are your advocates. It is confidential. We can provide support and navigation to all the next steps. We can provide you with support should you choose to report to law enforcement. We have peer counseling available, therapy available. In addition to doing all the prevention work that we do crisis response and support.
Dennis, let me ask you this. With respect to both of these numbers, I'm going to repeat them again. This is the crisis numbers that are available 24 hours a day.
Yes.
Is that right? 408-287-3000, 650-493-7273. If someone in, let's say, Connecticut is hearing this program live, or maybe it's delayed, who knows what happens. We are on the NPR public radio satellite. If they hear these numbers and they call to speak to someone who will answer the phone, can whoever is answering the phone be able to give them some indication where they should go, obviously in Connecticut?
I would encourage the person in Connecticut to Google Rape Crisis Center Connecticut and find their local, because we want to make sure there isn't any delay.
Okay.
So I encourage folks to do a quick search and find a local advocate who can support you through your local system and be there with you.
Very good.
Well said, Tanis.
All right, very good. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on the need for child molestation, sexual abuse prevention, education for children. My guests are Tanis Crosby, Chief Executive Officer of the YWCA Silicon Valley in San Jose, Judge Eugene Hyman, a retired Santa Clara County Superior Court judge, and Richard Alexander, a nationally recognized personal injury and consumer protection attorney. He's a former vice president of the State Bar of California, and Richard and I have known each other for many years. And as a matter of fact, when he was vice president, he was on the program here, because I've been doing this for 31 years, Richard, as you may know.
Thank you for having us here tonight.
It's been a long time. Our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, is available to you to call in. Also, if you are in some other state, since the National Board of Trial Advocacy has specialties in trial advocacy, I'll give you that phone number, and you might want to put that down wherever you may be outside of California or maybe inside of California, 866-384-6565, 866-384-6565. All right, we're going to start with Morris. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question about, I think I was listening to your show earlier, and you said something about pursuing, like, litigation, not criminal, but also...
Civil
litigation.
That's what Richard was just talking about.
So when I was 10 years old, I was molested, and I was wondering, the person I was molested by, I reported, and it went to trial. It actually didn't go fully to trial. He took a plea bargain after the arraignment to see if there was enough evidence to go to trial. And I was wondering if I have the right to sue him or something like that.
How old are you now, Morris?
I'm 28 now.
You're 28, and this was, what age were you when this occurred?
I was 10.
You were 10 years old. Richard, what is the statute of limitations in California?
Well, the statute of limitations has been extended by 8 years over age 18. And there's also, in some circumstances, we can make a claim for delayed discovery. Those are very complicated, and they're hard to pursue. And that's why it's important for anyone who's actually been in your circumstance to talk to all available resources, not only starting with the YWCA, but finding lawyers, and there are plenty of us who are happy to help, that will provide you with information on the front end. Very difficult to sue molesters because very few of them have sufficient assets, but in many situations, the setting is such that the responsibility may belong with a school or a church or any number of other institutions that in fact fail to properly supervise and clear people who are put in positions of responsibility.
Morris, what county are you in?
I'm currently in Emeryville.
And what county is that?
Oh, Alameda County.
Alameda County. Is this where were you molested in Alameda County?
No, it was in San Jose.
It was in Santa Clara County.
Santa Clara County.
Richard, what recommendation for Morris at this point? He is obviously... what's your age again, Morris?
28.
He's 28, and you mentioned, Richard, about an eight-year extension. What recommendation would you have for him? Because actually, personal injury attorneys will take cases on, if they take on a case, on a contingent fee basis, as opposed to clients, generally speaking, paying an hourly rate. So what would you recommend to Morris at this point?
I'll be happy to talk to you. We try to help everyone who calls and do our best to do so. You may be termed out, but there are individual facts that may be able to provide an opportunity for us to extend a hand to you. And you could call 888-777-1776, and we'll be happy to provide all available information.
Did you get the number, Morris?
888-777-1776.
That's right.
You got the spirit.
What I really appreciate is that we thank you for calling, Morris, and saying this. This happened. We hear you. We believe you. And for folks who haven't had the opportunity to pursue civil litigation in order to secure resources for healing and the cost of therapy, there are also low or no cost therapy opportunities out there. I'm not clear in Alameda County, but again, in San Jose, you can call YWCA Silicon Valley, and we do offer sliding scale therapy. And we have therapists who have specialized trauma-informed approaches.
Let me give you that phone number, Morris, if you're ready to write. It's area code 408-295-4011. And then press O for operator, and on you go. Thank you very much for calling.
I wanted to speak to that because I really appreciate what you're doing, because when I was 10, I was empowered speak out and go to criminal trial. But the first time I was molested, actually, it was much, much earlier. It was when I was 4 in preschool.
Oh, wow.
And that never even went to trial. So what you're doing is really empowering.
Good, Morris. Well, take care. Thank you very much for calling. Again, our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Also, I want to again invite those of you who listen to the program live next Wednesday on August 26th. While I'm doing the live program on the air and taking calls on the air, we will also have what we do on a monthly basis called Call a Lawyer, where you can call and speak to one of 7 or 8 attorneys. We have a number of different legal areas that are covered with the attorneys in the conference room here, but at California time, 7 p.m., that's Pacific time, and that's for August 26th, off the air between 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time, 1-800-525-9917. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 360-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced in the area that you're having difficulty in. They'll set you up for a half an hour consultation with an attorney, and with rare exception, for a half an hour consultation, you will pay somewhere between $25 to $35. This is in California. And that money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that very valuable service going. So, all right, we've got Nancy. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Hi. I had a question about, they say that most molestations to kids happen with either people they know or family members. And what I'm trying to figure out is, if say you have a young child, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and he or she is being molested by a family member, how does this child deal with that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be a father, an uncle, mm-hmm. a brother, grandfather.
That's right.
I just, you know, the idea of the child saying, no, don't touch me, yeah. I can't imagine it doing any good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Nancy,
very good point.
That is the problem. So in our child abuse prevention programming, we support children in knowing, saying no, stopping it if they can, leaving it, and telling someone. And we ask them to think about two safe people, one at school, one at home, so that there's a backup option. And as Richard said earlier in the program, listening for cues, being curious, not dismissing the child, but asking appropriately probing questions, being curious, listening carefully and closely. That's how you develop trust and create the safe, supportive environment for that child to come forward. And they may not be able to put the right words to it. And that's why it's so important as adults
that we believe. They work with you. They don't necessarily say to their father, stop doing that, because it's, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's power, and it is the sad reality. And that is why it is so important that we have advocates, that we have access, and that we continue and make education available.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Nancy, very much for calling. I greatly appreciate it. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. I have just had a question brought into the studio by Martin, who assists me on the program, and here it is. What do your guests think of the film, quote, Diary of a Teenage Girl, and there's a question mark there, end quotes. Do you think a film like this, in effect, condones child molestation or makes this behavior more socially acceptable, question mark? Does it matter that the teenage girl consented? I've never heard of this film. I'm wondering if either of you have heard of this.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Come closer to me.
I've heard it. I haven't seen it.
I've heard of it, but haven't seen it.
Okay. Apparently in the film, it sounds like, does it matter that the teenage girl consented? How do you deal with that?
No, it doesn't. I mean, if you're underage, you're by definition incapable of consenting. So it would be a crime. Anytime you have someone under the age of 18, then the person that is doing anything to sexually to a person under the age of 18, it's a crime.
And if that survivor believes it was choice, that's untreated trauma. Mm-hmm. That is the impact of untreated trauma. Mm-hmm. That is a survivor believing that they chose it, that they were blamed for it. That's internalized untreated trauma.
Mm-hmm. And it ends up having very long-term effects, because that is the kind of thinking that leads, that alters personalities, and in the long run causes severe damage, because people don't, they lose their self-esteem in the process, and without that, they're incapable of taking on the challenges.
I've got someone who likes to write some really good questions here, and I'm going to focus on Judge Hyman on this one. This was just brought into the studio again. Quote, child molestation, end quotes, can be an overly broad, sweeping category. What about two consenting teenagers under 18 who are having intimate relations, question mark? Are both of them child molesters, since neither is capable of consent, question mark? Should everyone convicted of child molestation be lumped into the, quote, sex offender, end quotes, category? Judge Hyman, how do you respond to that question?
It's not an easy one to answer, because you have 58 counties in California, 58 district attorneys, and 58 nuanced ways of dealing with it. In theory, even if you have two consenting teenagers under the age of 18 that are engaged in some type of sexual activity, technically it's a crime. Reality-wise, in terms of it's prosecuted, it depends upon the age. if they're both 16, usually it's not going to be prosecuted. On the other hand, if one is 17 and three quarters and the other one is 13, it probably will be prosecuted. So each county will have its own particular way of looking at it. One of the things that's important is in terms of what are the ages of the two individuals that are involved. Obviously, if we're talking in the 16 to 17 plus range, it's less likely to be prosecuted the younger the individuals
are. That is, from the victim standpoint,
yes.
16,
well,
17.
Technically, they're both committing a crime.
Yes.
Not just the older person, mm-hmm. but the younger person too, because by definition, if you're under 18, you're not capable of consent, at least in California. That's not true in every state in the United States. In some states, the age of consent is 15.
Mm-hmm.
Again, depending upon the age of the other individual that's participating with them. So it's a difficult question to answer.
All right. Cindy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling in just because I feel like the textbook for everything you've been talking about. So from my experience, and I think there's a couple of things that people don't really realize when you're sexually molested as a child is that, first of all, when you do go to the adult that you trust, if it's your mother who's married to the molester, guess what?
Yeah.
She's going to repudiate you. She often repudiates you. I mean,
yeah.
I was involved in a study with group therapy with eight other women, or seven other women, and all of us experienced this. Eight out of eight experienced that our mothers didn't believe us or, you know, they had vested interest with the molester. And so this is it's kind of like a double whammy. You are betrayed by someone that you trust, and you go to someone else you trust and are again betrayed. So, I think that there's a lot of people on the streets, women on the streets, who end up there because of this situation. I was asked to leave. That was one part, but also the consequences include, as someone alluded to, PTSD, alcoholism, domestic violence. I've been through all of that. So I'm sitting here listening, going, "Oh my God!" It's like yes, and I have no recourse. I have no legal recourse. Hopefully, he's dead. But and fortunately, my mother died, so I didn't have to stay in touch with them. But anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you, Cindy.
The pain persists for years, the dysfunction. It's incredible.
Cindy, what you might want to consider doing is bringing the benefit of your experience to others and joining in with the YWCA and offering your time and your insight into what this is all about. And it's only by women, in large part women, speaking out at any number of presentations. And I think one of the first time this happened, it was at the YWCA in San Jose. I asked how many women in the room had been molested or knew someone who was molested or was related to someone. So that gave freedom for everyone to acknowledge or to report. Every woman in the room raised their hand. The stunning thing was what happened next. All the men turned their heads to look at their partner.
Oh,
and all the women gestured with their hand, and you could see their words on their lips. They said, "Later,
later, later."
I'll tell you. Because whole mess is not discussed. And the very reason that it's not discussed, and Tanis mentioned this earlier, is it's so important, it has to be discussed. There must be transparency. We're going to have to get rid of a lot of silly conventions and ostensibly politically correct positioning in order to get to the nitty-gritty, and that is that these are issues that have to be opened up, and we have to have a public discussion about them.
Cindy, I want to thank you for speaking up and, again, highlighting it's not the stranger in the van. It's who we know, and that it can happen to anyone, by anyone. And I want to thank you so much for speaking up and speaking out.
And Cindy...
Well, thank you, and I'm so impressed by this program. That's why I called wow.
And Cindy, in light of Richard's recommendation that you might want to get in touch with the YWCA Silicon Valley and perhaps get involved in trying to help other people, I'm going to give you the phone number again of the YWCA Silicon Valley in San Jose, 408-295-4011, 408-295-4011.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your talking with us. It's very important that other people hear about this because this, I think it helps people to feel that they have some freedom in also letting others know that they maybe have been victimized. Our toll-free number, and we do have a few minutes left if you'd like to call in with your question, your comment, something that you'd like others to know about, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you're hearing this program other than on August 19th, we're doing this program live right now.
What I'd like to pick up on is what Richard identified when he was in the room and asked folks to basically, you know, let's create a safe space to have a real conversation. How many folks have experienced sexual assault?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the power of people putting up their hand and speaking up in a room, in a conversation, and that's a powerful, powerful force, right?
Yes.
That is how change starts, is by having that dialogue, having the safety to create the conversation, to recognize and take action that silence is not okay.
Tanis, the programs that you have, the child abuse prevention programs, both for the youngsters starting in kindergarten, and then you have the teen programs for up through 6th to 7th grade students. Do you invite the parents to be at any of these programs?
It is for the children and the teachers.
I see.
So again, we're creating those safe spaces in the schools. And we heard from one of your callers that the family unit was not necessarily safe. So this is another environment in which the children can create a safe, supportive environment. So I think that that's also really key, because we know that often it can happen in a family unit or in the home or a friend's home. So it's absolutely critical that we create multiple safe spaces for children.
Okay. Matt,
Richard. The important point is that the offender is a known person on a regular basis. And it's someone that you would not necessarily suspect or expect. And it's a teenager who's caring for younger children. And that's the predominant form. It's not... some caricature of a molester next door. And that's why the work that Tanis is doing, and that's why we need to change state law on this issue. We need the California Education Code to mandate that children are taught at age-appropriate levels or with age-appropriate educational tools that their body is their own, that there is safe and there is unsafe touching, and they really have to understand no, go, and tell, and that empowers them and provides them with the resilience so that we can begin to break this chain of molestation that continues and continues and continues. What we've done in the past doesn't work. Prosecuting molesters doesn't work because there are too many of them, and there's too great a supply of potential molestees.
Yes, and... Again, we read those statistics. Chances are you know somebody who has experienced sexual abuse as a child. So as parents, as adults, you've got to create the safety. We can't pretend this doesn't happen. It happens all the time.
Okay, Richard, let me take another call here. Matt, welcome to the program. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you for this show. I'm really just gratified to hear that hear a show like this, and also that there are so many avenues for young people, youngsters, and their parents to explore to, you know, get to remedy this situation. Because, you know, I'm quite older, quite a bit older now, but when I was a kid, this happened to me. And what one of your guests said about the long-term effects is just really on point. And you don't even realize it. I mean, mm-hmm. know why you behave in the way you do, how you know, the fact that you can't commit in relationships, or that you have depression, or that you have fear of maybe, you know, accomplishing certain things. All of that can be traced back to the trauma you experienced as a child. And it was only through therapy and a book that I picked up called Beyond Betrayal, which sort of, you know, helped me to see why things happen the way they do, and to recognize that, you know, a lot of it was not my fault. So thank you very much.
How old were you when you were molested, Matt?
I was nine.
Nine.
Yeah,
how old are you now?
I'm 60.
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been many, many years ago, and you know, you think that, oh, well, that happened to me and it was horrible, but it's over. Mm. But all through my life, there were episodes where, you know, I couldn't understand why I was not able to do certain things or what was stopping me. And as I said, through therapy, I realized that a lot of it had to do with my self-worth, my feelings of self-worth that were connected to what had happened to me.
Well, I thank you for calling.
Sure. Thank you.
You know, that's all too tragic in a common story. And the we see from the lessons of the children who are molested by members of the Roman Catholic Church, that they, by the priests, that they carried this for the longest time and had the worst outcomes. And one of the common outcomes is we have a high rate of suicide, and it's the third leading cause of death for teenagers. And any number of some studies report that as many as one in three boys who is sexually assaulted attempts suicide. Mm. The bottom line is this is a disaster, and it is outrageous that we do not have laws on the books to require mandatory public education across the board, so that we empower children to begin to put an end to this cyclic culture of child molestation.
So I'd like to leave with a challenge to the listeners. We heard in the first half that we outlined the issue. In the second half, we heard from survivors themselves, brave enough to share their story, to talk about the impact, the sustaining impact on their lives. What if each person calling called their local school and demanded this education in the schools, and called their assembly person and demanded that this kind of state law be passed? Think of the change we could affect now and later to get what we want and we need and we see for ourselves and our children in our community.
I want to thank you very much for joining us. It's been great having you on the program, Richard Alexander, Tanis Crosby, and Judge Eugene Hyman. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Very valuable program. And thank you all of you who have called in. I think it's been terrific that you did. Next week, the topic will be family law, starting with a recent California Supreme Court decision regarding date of separation of spouses and whether or not the earnings of the spouses are either community or separate property. My guest will be B.J. Fathom, a specialist in family law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Next week, on August 26th, will also be our Call a Lawyer Night, when you can talk with an attorney off the air by calling 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Your legal rights program staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr, production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio. I'm Chuck Finney.